need a place to stash my notes here, so let me... All right. Terry, am I on? It's good to have your sound man with you. That's your wingman there. I've been embarrassed a few times when I start singing, following along with you guys, and y'all are such good singers, and somebody's got my microphone on, and that kind of ruins it for everybody. So, so thank you, Terry, for not doing that. it is a joy to be here. I remember being here many times as a child, although it was probably two or three times. Mom tells me that the first time I was here was when she was about 7 or 8 months pregnant with me. And so I actually was here prior to being Tom Corson. So there is a lot of history. Mom really wanted to be here. We had some obligations and things that she needed to do, but she was really pushing to go. And we had a contingency from Costa Rica. We're hoping to begin a pretty large project in Costa Rica that will be a Central America training ground for people from all over Central America. They won't have to come to the United States and have to get visas and all of these things. They can. Costa Rica is a stable country, and they can go there. And they ask when they could come and visit our campus, and I told them next week. And so they came back and told me they've got tickets for last week. So that's just how it works. And she had to stay and help a little bit with some of them. But she did. She sends her greetings. She wanted you guys to know she's with us in spirit. And as I was traveling up I-65, coming into the southern part of Indiana, she happened to call, wanted to know where I was. And I said, just getting into Indiana. And she said, oh, that's great. You've only got 12 more hours. 12 hours, huh? Yeah, I said, I don't think so, Mom. GPS says, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours or something. And she says, oh, the last time I went, I had 4 kids in the car, so it just seemed like 12 hours. So we have been coming up quite a bit, but if you count the time before I was born, that would be 54 years, and then sponsoring and being prayer partners with CFAT over the last, since CFAT's existence. In May, we will be 40 years old as an organization. So you guys were, prior to that, supportive. And I want to tell you a little bit about CFAT today. And just proud to have a Bible-believing church like you all that is behind us in word and deed. So CFAT believes that we are all called to be missionaries and evangelists. That means laity and clergy. And CFAT gives a lot of opportunities for people to do that. We use a lot of engineers, teachers, doctors, preachers, evangelists that we feel we give you the opportunity to serve, but your church is doing the same thing in your community. So today I want to talk about witness a little bit. We are the witness. This little light of mine, you know, we're the light on the hill that is sharing the gospel to people around the world, many of them who have never heard the saving grace. So we're called to be evangelists and missionaries. Sometimes we get that confused a little bit. You know, the New Testament church really didn't distinguish too much between laity and clergy. The disciples were, you know, they were the clergy going out. This day and age, sometimes we get it a little mixed up. And I don't know if you guys know the difference between laity and clergy. But some people think that the clergy gets paid for doing good and the laity is good for nothing. That's not the case. We all are called and we all are part of the Great Commission and missions, whether it's in Jerusalem or around the world. So in talking about being God's witness, I want to share a little bit about Luke 24:45. Jesus was appearing to his disciples after his resurrection, and he's, in my Bible it says he opened their understanding so they may comprehend the scriptures. And in Luke 46 through 48, then he said to them, "Thus it is written, and thus it was necessary for Christ to suffer and to be raised from the dead on the third day, and that repentance and remission of sin should be preached in his name to all nations, beginning in Jerusalem, and you are witnesses of these things." So he's basically sending his disciples out, saying, "You're witnesses, and you're to testify. You're to go out and share with the world." God also told his people that the same thing years ago in Isaiah 43:10, "Ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, and my servants whom I have chosen." He's talking to his people there, and he repeats it again in Isaiah 43:11-12. "I, even I, am the Lord, and beside me there is no Savior. I have declared and have saved, and I have shown. Therefore, you are my witness, saith the Lord. I am your God." So I want us to, again, in what CFAT's doing, what you're doing, I want to challenge us today that we are the witness that goes into the world, into Jerusalem, Samaria, and the uttermost parts. Let's open with a word of prayer. Lord Jesus, we just thank you for the homecoming that we have today, Lord, just the opportunity to meet and meet new friends and old ones. And Lord, as we go through this life, we just are grateful for the brothers and sisters that encourage and support the work that you're doing on this planet. We just pray that you would be with us today, Lord, and let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and redeemer. Amen. Okay. I'm not sure the date. Should have asked somebody before I got up here, but it was in the 60s, I imagine, that the country church got started. And my understanding was Judah and Dorothy Trowbridge started the church with 22 other adults and their families. Mom tells me about, Mom and Dad said that I believe the house may still be close by here. Is that right? Right next door here? And they said it was so incredible. You know, it's easy to look at a church and say, okay, here's the church. But the church is really the people. And I love it, the organicness of saying, we're going to take the resources that we have at hand, and we're going to praise and worship God with that. That's kind of what CFAT is about. CFAT is about using what you have at hand. We try to teach people how to meet their basic human needs, which is spiritual, physical, mental. We feel that God has called us to abundant life, and God gives us the resources to use in his service. In this case, the Trowbridges were using their house. Mom was saying every room was a Sunday school classroom, and even down to the point where they were using the bathroom, I believe, for the children's service. So the kids would line up on the bathtub and get to hear their children's lesson. So what a testimony your church has been over the years. And Mom was just, again, saying how encouraging it was to see how you're growing and continue to thrive and be an outreach to your community. So the first pastor, I believe, was Steve Manley. I guess some of you may, am I right in that? He had invited Uncle John Tao, who's an evangelist, Mom's brother, to come up and speak to your church. And he had a revival. And during that time, what you were sharing, Aaron, was that they had called a pastor, but they didn't feel like they should really have him installed until they had that missions pastor in place. Those of you that know mom and dad know sometimes they have a strong leaning and believe that God's calling them to certain things that may, from North American standpoints, you're like, is God calling you or are you getting ahead of God on this? And in my opinion, this may have been one of those times, but they had raised enough money to go to Puerto Rico, where later I was born, and serve in missions. And they had enough money to go. They had a pledge of $25 a month. They had two children and one on the way. And they came and asked, when my uncle was here, your church asked, do you know any missionaries that need support or that we could support? He says, as a matter of fact, my sister and brother-in-law are ones. And so y'all invited them up. They spoke. They went back home to Alabama. This is probably early 60s. And the couple of days later, your preacher called and said, we understand you're going to Puerto Rico. You've shared with us. How are you doing on your support? And the support so far was, well, we've got $25 a month. And he says, well, so you guys are going to stay here and continue to speak to churches. No, we've got enough money to get down there, so we're leaving. Does that make a lot of sense these days? No, we're going down. God's called us. The money will come. And I've heard this time and time again in different churches where they've gone. They're like, what are you doing? And the preacher said, well, I'll get back with you. And he went and talked to the leadership, these 22 members that you guys had here. And a few days later, they got back and said, we're going to support you at $80 a week. So feel comfortable to go. So really, you guys, going way back to that point, sometimes we say people aren't real smart, but God takes care of fools, widows, and orphans. I don't know where we fall in that, but you guys had been really just following up on that. Puerto Rico, I wanted to share a little story with you about Puerto Rico. Your work down there, mom and dad were going around planting churches. Later they were tent makers and had a photographic business. But there were six little churches on one of the coastlines, the beaches, which I had the opportunity to visit not too long ago after Hurricane Maria. And these are little beach houses. When I say beach houses, back then they were mangroves with mosquitoes that would come in when the wind wasn't blowing so bad that you could just rake them off your arms. Only the very poor people lived out in this area. And mom and dad would start at one end of that beach and go down every Sunday and stop in the houses every 2 miles or so and share the gospel. Those churches, some of them are still there. And CFAT is a development organization. We go in and help people be sustainable, help them develop their job skills, help them develop spiritually. And there are a lot of relief organizations that go out and give handouts and give things in times of need, like after an earthquake or a tornado, or in this case, after a hurricane. And Hurricane Maria just devastated Puerto Rico. I had not been back since I was probably 8 or 10 years old. And mother and dad both are like, Tom, you're the director of CFAT now. This is where you were born. Aren't we going to do something? And I'm like, we're not a relief organization. This is not what we do. And there was a series of events that happened just prior to this that kind of led to the opportunity of me being able to go down and serve. And one of them is we have a lawyer friend in Puerto Rico that's about to retire. And she was praying. She says, she's been talking to me and saying, I want to work for CFAT. I want to come to Alabama and work at CFAP, but I'm not retired yet. I don't have the opportunities. Well, her whole office was shut down, and she had a dream one night and said that, you know, she was kind of crying the blues. I don't have air conditioner. My power's out. We don't have water. You know, the hurricane just hit. But she lived in a good area that had some resources, generators and things. And she said, you know, I'm wanting to go somewhere else and do missions. And she had a dream that God came down and said, it's in your backyard. I brought it to you. This is your opportunity. So she called me and said, look, I've got a place you can stay. Can you guys come? I don't know if you guys have been out to see our little booth out front there, but there's a little filter on that table, a little blue filter. It's a Sawyer filter. And those things, I can get the whole packet for about $20. And that is good for 1 million gallons of clean water. We've used those in a lot of areas that need relief. And so when this lawyer called me and said, I've got a place for you to stay. I know all these places we can go. And God's told me in a dream that I'm to be a missionary here. Can you come down? To me, that was a pretty clear direction. FEMA is going down with pallets of water. And I think 1 million gallons, we did the math on it, would cost about $200,000. Here, for $20, we can provide 1 million gallons of water to people that need it. So my lawyer friend said, I'll meet you at the airport, and I'll take you through the whole island, and we'll be able to work. So I got there. We worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Sunday afternoon she called and said, my boss just called me and we have a new generator at the office and I have to go to work tomorrow. So I'm down there for a week. I haven't been to Puerto Rico since I was 8 years old. There are no signs on the island. GPS works sporadically. And my one guide on the island says, I'm leaving you and, you know, good luck doing whatever else you need to do here. So, God, you call me down here. This is, I'm sure there's a need for it. And there was. We were able to distribute, I think it was over 1 billion gallons worth of filters for clean drinking water to many churches, many communities, many organizations that really needed it. We also had some donations for power chargers and lights for the kids. A lot of good things, but just a quick story about this place on the beach called Loiza. Some of the poorest of the Puerto Ricans that were down there. And I drove into, my guide had left me. I said, where am I going now? Well, I know Mom and Dad served in Loiza. At least that would be a place I could go. Maybe they would recognize some of the pictures or the people we're able to serve. And I really felt God was calling us there. So I'm by myself in a rental car, and I got into that part of the island, had to cross over some rivers and lakes. And we're able to give filters to some needy people. But on the way back out, I was trying to get back before dark because the whole place is, you know, it shuts down after dark and you've got no power anywhere. And there was one church, both doors were blown in and there was no roof on it. There was just a tarp. And I said, well, I wanted to stop, but I really felt like I needed to keep going. And I drove around 2 or 3 block area 3 times and I was lost because all these roads were closed and locked and whatever. And God just kept bringing me back to that church. And so I stopped. Got my map out, and I looked, and they were having a service in there, and it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so I've still got a lot of water filters, and I said, let me just step in and see what, if I don't want to interrupt the service, but see if anybody in the back I can talk to. And I stuck, the door was about as wide as yours back there. I stuck my head inside, and the whole service stopped. And everybody turned around, who's this white American sitting there in our church service? And I said, well, I'm Tom Corson from Wedowee, Alabama, and just passing through, but I've got some water filters, and I understand you guys need water. These folks all stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm a good-looking guy, but, you know, what, you know, why are you, you know, why do I get a standing ovation on this? That's, and so it was just such a blessing to me. That was one of the churches that through you guys, Mom and Dad had helped start back in the 60s sometime. And they said they had now five churches that had come together and were 4 o'clock in the afternoon. This was the leadership of those five churches that didn't have clean water. They were desperate, and they said, we have nowhere to turn but to God. So they had all met at that one church and said they had just finished 30 minutes of praying, and they're going into praise and worship, and they knew God was going to provide. So as the praise and worship started, here comes one of your ambassadors to help, and that was a standing ovation. We were asking God for water and electricity, and that's what I had in the trunk of my car. So following God, looking at some of the work that you guys have helped with. So why is there CFAT? CFAT, I've got a little PowerPoint. I'd like to just go through some pictures with you on this. And I think I can, to stay within the time frame, I think I can go a little quicker on using the PowerPoint there. But there are more than 20,000 children in the world, not counting adults, that die every day from lack of basic human needs. CFAT works with families and communities to share God's love in practical ways so that children and families can live and reach their God-given potential. CFAT's mission is sharing God's love through service, education, and personal involvement with a needy world. Our vision is to bridge the first and two-thirds world. Two-thirds would be the majority of the world that live in poverty, and America, who lives in pretty much affluency. I mean, we spend more on air conditioners in the United States than the rest of the world spends on all of their electricity. So when we think of poverty, there are people that live on less than a dollar a day that are looking for a salvation. That doesn't come from me. It doesn't come from CFAT. It comes from Jesus Christ. But we feel Jesus has called CFAT in particular to help them, as John 10:10 says, have life and have it more abundantly. We feel Christ has called us to that. So our vision is to bridge the first and two-thirds world to alleviate spiritual and physical poverty, and also to empower people to their God-given potential. We want to empower and teach people that live in these other countries how they can help themselves. There are four major ways that we work. We work through our graduates. So people that come and learn appropriate technologies, they learn spiritual formation, they learn how to purify water and how to do a Sunday school class, but they do this in the name of Christ. These are the people that we'll get behind and help them with projects they're doing. CFAT trains them, number one. Number two, we work with small projects, $500 to $5,000, that they'll submit to us, and we'll get churches like you all to help support them. We also take short-term mission teams. I want to encourage you as a church to consider that. We've got folks that go, we've got about 25 teams that go out a year to Ecuador and Bolivia and places in Africa like Uganda and Zimbabwe. These are places that we work, and we invite folks like you to go. We have medical professionals, we have teachers, we have lawyers, construction workers. There's a lot of opportunities. We're talking about the laity and the clergy. We all are clergy serving in different components. at CFAT. Some of you all have been to our campus. Some of you have seen the 175 acres that God has given us. We bought that back in 1982 from the only avowed atheist that we knew in the two counties. And he says, I don't know about this God stuff, but I do see that you care for people, and that moves me to want you all to own this land. 175 acres, we call it the Galilee campus. And we've trained people from 93 different countries that go out and share God's love in practical ways. This man who sold us the land, after he sold it to us, he said, okay, now that we're done with the business part of it, you know, I want to know why you help people. I want to know why you're called to do this. And he heard the gospel, and he actually passed away 5 days after that. We feel he accepted Christ. And we said, it's not God that you don't believe. What you see in us is a God that's shining through your witness, your testimony. So each one of us has that ability to be a witness and to be a testimony. And here, we just think, we praise the Lord that God used an atheist to bring forward the history that CFAT has now. We do training for adults and people from all over different countries, but we also have training for youth. We do learn and serve, and that is a rising 7th graders to 12th graders. They'll come and stay on our campus and live in a simulated global village. So they'll be living in Bolivia or Ecuador or Zimbabwe in little houses that are made by people from those countries and role play, and they walk in the shoes of people that live in these different countries. Also, we have a slum village there that 1 out of 6 people in developing countries live in urban slums. It's a whole other set of issues that you have to deal with. And in that capacity, the youth are learning about that. And so they'll spend the night in these slum villages and have to survive and walk in the shoes of somebody that would live in the slums. Now, we don't do that to make them feel guilty. We make them do that so they'll understand that the world doesn't live like we do here. And then we give them opportunities to learn obstacles to development, some of the different technologies, some of the ways that they, too, can be a solution to sharing the gospel to people around the world. We'd love to have your youth, 1 or 2 or 20 of them, come down and spend a week with us doing that. Wonderful opportunity for that. I want to share just a little bit of the background of CFAT with you. And you've given me a little bit of generosity with time here. I know I'm trying to get a lot in, but if I can just, is this thing gonna... okay. So, Mom and Dad, as you all kind of know a little bit of the story, they went to Asbury College, met there. From Asbury, went to Cuba. They were there till Fidel Castro came. They were run out of the country, Costa Rica. Then from there to Puerto Rico, where I was born, and you all kind of came into the picture at that point. Then later, we worked in Haiti, Colombia, other places. But there was an opportunity in 1976 to go to Bolivia. And Bolivia is probably the poorest country in, certainly in South America, but one of the poorest countries in the world. We went to live with the homesteaders at the level of the people. $80 a month was what the national pastors made. And that's what Mom and Dad made when they went to serve. I was 10 years old at the time, and we had a family meeting. Dad was pastoring churches in Wedawi, and our little family got together, and we said, we're going to Bolivia. My first question is, where is that? What continent? Where are you? And, of course, the next thing is, I don't want to go. And we ended up going and spending a number of years down there. But it was through that situation that CFAT was created. And it's the way most people live in the world. You don't have Social Security. You don't have DHR. You don't have a safety net. You go out and you survive, live or die, based on your neighbors, based on your ability to survive. And in this case, this was a homesteading area. The government had just carved this road, outledged this road down the Andes Mountains from 15,000 feet down to about 800 feet. And you had to travel this road. They call it the Death Road. New York Times calls it that. You can Google it, look up the Death Road. You'll see pictures of this. Right here on your left, that's part of the road right there. There's a tractor trailer on that you can't see. It's just little tiny. That's giving you a depth. That's probably 3,000 or 4,000 foot drop. We were invited by a local church to come down that had 9 members and to pastor the church. So we went down as pastors to share the gospel, your traditional missionaries. This is our house. It was built in 3 days, dirt floor, thatch roof. We had running water. Tom, here's 2 5-gallon buckets. Run, go get me some water. This is Dad in the little church, and the church just continued to grow. It's still active in Bolivia. This is our home, thatch roof, over to the right. We went down in the traditional sense to plant churches, share the gospel. Literally, the homesteaders that were down there were dying of malnutrition. The little boy on your left there, he's got a nice fat little face. That's a sign of malnutrition when they swell up like that. The middle family, they have 2 of those children are mentally retarded, and it is known that children that don't get enough nutrition between 0 and 2 years old suffer from retardation that is irreversible. That'll be the rest of their lives. We continue to plant churches. This is one of our pastors that's going out down these jungle villages to share the gospel. But our neighbors, this little girl, Blanca, was our next door neighbor within a month of us being down there. She got a cold and died because her body was so compromised. The parents came up and wanted to know if we had anything white we could dress her in so the angels would recognize her when she got to heaven. And we didn't, but we did have some paper and were able to cover the coffin and make them feel a little better about it. And we shared with them, the angels will recognize them. They will know when they get there. But these were things that we dealt with on a daily basis. We knew there was, sharing the gospel is what it's about. But when people are hungry and starving and dying, that's not abundant life. I've got a testimony from an evangelist, Pastor Obi in Nigeria, that was going through something very similar. He went through our training and learned how to purify water, learned about proper nutrition and how he could provide it for his people. But he said, when I came to CFAT, I've been an evangelist for 20 years, and he held his Bible up. And he says, I've gone into villages and buried numerous members of families, mostly children. And he said, the last time he did that, the father of the family said, man of God, talk to God. Tell him about our needs here. God has something for us. And he says, I've got the gospel. I have evangelism. I can tell you about the saving grace of Jesus Christ. But he said, as far as the physical need, I got nothing. I got nothing. He says, now that I've gone through CFAT training, he says, I can go back and share the gospel, and I also know how I can help people save lives. Some of you know with babies, if they get 70% of the people that die in developing countries is from lack of water and sanitation. And there's some simple, simple ways you can purify water. Lack of water and sanitation. And so if a baby gets dehydrated, if they drink impure water, and they start vomiting and have diarrhea, it's about 24 hours, they're going to die. So in this case, you're looking at a simple thing such as salt, a little pinch of sugar, and water. It makes like a Pedialyte that will help save babies' lives. That's an appropriate technology, as simple as that. Those are some of the things that we're taking out to these people. Here, organizing your community. In the middle, this is Ben Ho, one of our directors in Bolivia, and we brought in cattle and goats and things like that, but they had vampire bats. How do you keep the vampire bats away? You need a light. We were using manure from the animals to make methane that would run the lights all night long and keep the vampire bats away. You also can use that for cooking. Smokeless cook stoves is one of the things that we teach also. The World Health Organization says that's the fourth leading cause of death in developing countries is women and children inhaling smoke from cooking fires in the kitchen. So saving lives in that way. Protein was a big issue. They had rice, they had cassava, potatoes, but no protein. Auburn University helped us with tilapia and getting protein that to this day they're continuing to use. Clean housing, basic human needs is what CFAT's about. And that's water, food, shelter, clothes. Here, after we dug the fish ponds, we found we could make fired brick out of the clay that we dug out of the ground. God gives the resources you need at hand for what you need. We continued to work on drinking water, sanitation for folks, different types of crops that had high protein, and here we are going down the trail sharing the gospel. It's not one or the other, it's a combination of those. In 1979, we came back to Widawi, and Mom and Dad felt called to start training people how they could meet their basic human needs. We can go as a missionary to one community, but we want to be able to share that with so many people. And now it's 93 countries, thousands of people are taking this message of abundant life to their communities. So in the church in Widawi, Alabama, it was started. These are some of the people that are training on our campus to the left. We take short-term mission teams. And as you see on the right, some of the youth that come learn about missions, learn about how they can be part of the Great Commission. Not only churches, but right now we have, I think, 12 universities that give college credit for trainings that CFAT does. In May, we have a May field training that University of Alabama in Birmingham, one of your top public health institutions, gives 6 credit hours to their master's level people for coming for 2 weeks to learn how to do these appropriate technologies. So that gives us just a wonderful sense of credibility of what we're teaching, but our passion is to do it for Jesus Christ. This is Leaf for Life. You can take basic plants. Kudzu is one of those. I don't know if y'all have that up here, but we've got, it's a wild plant that grows just crazy down in the South. But there are things like sweet potatoes. Y'all, I'm sure, like sweet potatoes. Well, we grow sweet potatoes to use the leaves, and they are one of the highest nutritional valued plants. Now, you can take those leaves, dry them in a solar dryer, and they'll last for up to a year if you keep them dry. And a tablespoon of that leaf powder will keep a child from being malnourished. So you're looking at things that we may not have vitamins that we can take in, but we can teach people how to do these simple technologies that will save lives. Different hydroponics, different types of... in Africa, the local folks are growing 1.5 tons of maize per hectare. We have a technology called Farming God's Way that we're able to do 8 tons per hectare. Our neighbors are coming over. They want to see what we're doing, and they want to hear the gospel from us when they see things like that. So we use the Leaf for Life. There's another thing that if it's socially adaptable, people eat insects in a lot of different countries. So there are different insects that are safe, good to eat, and we don't try to force those on people, but it is something that in Uganda, for example, when the grasshoppers come in the fall, they call it manna from heaven. They love them. So there are places they do that. And we have our team members that go with us that try it also. Sometimes we, you know, Ecuador's guinea pig. There you got grasshoppers. Y'all remember the old song, "Where he leads me, I will follow. And what he feeds me, I will swallow." So y'all can just some of the different technologies, community mapping, knowing what's at hand. There are so many places that go in. Our tendency as Americans is to do needs-based assessment. Let me go in and tell you the needs these people have. Here what we do is asset-based. We go into a community and work with them to find out what assets do they have, and then we can work in developing those and getting them to work together. Many times it's just working in community. One of the first projects we did in Bolivia with the local people was asking them what their biggest felt need was, and it was for a soccer field. We're like, a soccer field? You need water, you need sanitation, you need all this other stuff. Well, a soccer field got everybody to come together on Sunday, and then we helped them organize it so they would come to church, and then afterwards everybody played soccer, but it created community. We didn't know that, but the local people knew it. Let's see what your assets are and work with those. Some of the smokeless cook stoves, solar power, clean water to the right here. This is Water Watch. There's so much we can do to purify water, but many times if you can keep it from getting polluted, you're ahead of the game. It's just like public health. These are some of the youth. This is our slums over to the left. I always tell people we got the best slums in Alabama. So if y'all come visit, we'll let you stroll through there. We do prayer walks. Some of the international teams. We have over 250 kids that are off the streets in Ecuador now because of projects and churches like you all that have helped us build after-school programs and preschool programs. This is one of the biggest places that we take short-term teams. Love to have some folks from here join us on these. I was with Auburn Building Science a week ago down in Ecuador building some of these facilities. These are some of the micro-enterprises teaching people how to make a living. This is an orphanage we have in Uganda that is this year is self-supporting. Basically, we helped start a Christian school that would support the orphans, and we have 50 orphans, 250 students that go to the Christian school. The guy on the right there, the Afro guy, is his name was Musa, which in Islamic means Moses, and so he was Muslim. And through the work there with the children, he came to Christ and wanted to be. We had just filled in the cafeteria with rubble then, or getting ready to pour the slab on it. And he says, "I want to be baptized today." And that was the loose area. They dug a hole after we had just finished it. We've got a lot of Methodists that go down. They're like, "We can just sprinkle you." "No, no, no. I want to go under. Take me down, dig me a hole. Let's get me baptized." In Bolivia, the average income in this place is $97 a year. $97 a year. These people can typically get one crop a year. The Auburn Engineers Without Borders has been going down for 7 years working with us on irrigation projects. Many of you are farmers. You know water is life. Water, can't grow things without water. It's very arid, $97 a year, one crop. Now they're up to three crops a year with irrigation. We're also teaching them how to do small animal husbandry and other things now that they can grow alfalfa and other things that will help their communities are always involved. In Bolivia, we have a church, a Christian school, a hospital. Access is one of those things that makes it a little hard to get to. And here, Bridges to Prosperity helped us. This is the longest bridge of its kind. That was about 8% of the cost of another bridge. It gets 10,000 people from one side of the river to the other to have access to all of these facilities. So these are some of the things, and if I can just The lady in the middle here is one of our graduates from high school that has gone on to become a medical doctor. She's married to the local pastor. They're going in serving abundant life in body, mind, and spirit. So we thank you all for being part of CFAT. Thank you for having, I wish I could tell you a lot more about what we're doing because there's so much more to share. But I do want, the one thing I want to make sure you guys are clear on is we see you guys as our partners. Y'all have been with us before CFAT was there. And I want you all to consider being active with us in short-term missions, but also come to our campus and see what we're doing for the North American church. We couldn't do it without folks like you, and there's places you can connect. TSA will get you, but we can take you down to Ecuador with us or whatever. We've got some opportunities to do some really, really cool things. And again, Mom and Dad, send their greetings, and we are just, again, so proud of our relationship and being part of God's kingdom through service, education to a needy world. Thank you guys so much for having me here.